podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name is Daniel.
It's your boy, Have Hope.
We do the podcast every Tuesday. Remember to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, all the Talking Tactics. If you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. It's free. Leave us a five-star review. We'll read it on the show. If you're on Spotify, give us a follow as well. And we have a Patreon page. Shout out to everybody on Patreon.
Yeah, thanks for the help.
Much appreciated, man.
Yeah, man. Much appreciated. We're giving you that real talk, man. Anything, nothing is taboo. Well, except a few things, you know.
Yeah, if you want to know what we're talking about, subscribe to the Patreon. All right, where are we starting? We are starting in Italy this week because Juventus have been dethroned from their Serie A perch. They've been
Our dream is over.
You know what I want to look up? So their first title would have been 2011-2012, right?
I believe if they'd kept Allegri or so forth, they may have done 10. But here's the
sorry, just keep sorry.
Yeah, but no, but even if they kept, they should have won last year. And I think everyone knows that they should have won last year. They messed up. Like Juventus were not supposed to, they were not supposed to win last year. That was supposed to be when it was supposed to be broken last year, but Inter just kept on screwing up. You know. So
are you ready to hear the team that Juventus had in the 2011-2012?
So this is the first season that they went on the
run. This is the first year of their streak. So I'm just going to go through like the highlights. If I mispronounce Italian names, guys, forgive me.
I'll correct you.
Yeah, so we got Buffon, Chiellini, Casares, Fabio Grosso, age 34.
Wow.
Barzagli, Bonucci, Lichtensteiner.
Lichtensteiner.
Okay, there we go. Marchisio, Andrea Pirlo, age 33. Vidal, age 25. Ironic, because now he's with Inter. Wow. 10 years later, Alessandro Del Piero, age 37, was in the team for their first. Quagliarella was a 29-year-old.
Quagliarella.
I feel like I was close enough. You didn't have to get me on that.
No, I do.
Luca Toni was in the team, age 35. yeah, that's basically it for the forwards. I mean, that was their first one. I'm slightly disappointed because this has been a theme for us for, I don't know how long we've been doing the podcast now, but yeah, I was kind of hoping 10 in a row would be a thing.
No, I think for me, I'm happy and sad. I'm sad because I can't get these jokes off because those would have been some amazing jokes, but I'm happy because it would have been really bad on Syria. And I think it would have been bad for Hope or Ball. But here's the thing, though, because I want to dig deep into Inter Milan and so forth with Conte and Lukaku. But there is nothing stopping Bayern Munich from doing this. Bayern will do this. Unless a crazy miracle happens. You know? Because Bayern are on something totally different. Because, you see, the danger with Bayern and Germany is that Bayern Munich are very well run. And they're much more responsibly run than Juventus are. So Bayern Munich are guys that think 5, 6, 7 years into the future. So they'll never be in the situation that Juventus found themselves in with either Sarri or Pirlo now. And also, like, you know, you have Bayern Munich taking the best players and managers from their rivals. So they are fully ensuring that they are the strongest team in the league.
Imagine if Bayern Munich decided, you know what, we're just going to give Bastian Schweinsteiger the team with no management.
No.
So he's never managed, but he's just going to come take our team. Like, that would never fly.
No way.
But with Juventus, Pirlo, bring him. let's see what happens. After 3 days with the under-15s, 19s, whoever he was with, full-time manager. It's okay. Pride comes before the fall, as the preacher might say.
I mean, was it a case of arrogance, or was it a case of they had given up on 9 in a row and here, revamp, let's go? Or did they really believe that, wait, we've done this 9 in a row, we can pretty much put in Krusty the Clown in the, as manager and we'll still be able to see what's up? And no, and Pirlo is not Krusty the Clown. Let me repeat.
No.
He is not Krusty the Clown. I'm just
in a managerial sense.
He's not.
He might as well be.
Nah, he's not. Relax. But yeah, they could put like my little cousin, who are like 8 years old, and win. That was their mindset that, hey, look, man, we've done this 9 in a row. Let's look at putting it in the dugout and we'll still manage to say what's up. Yeah. But it's been disastrous because I watched Juventus game against Udinese, and these guys are crap. These guys are bad, and you could just see their body language. And it was funny because I saw Cristiano's body language at 1-0 down when they were taking a corner, and just how he just leant against the post. I was like, he's thinking that, mate, what did I get myself into? And then he then turns up, and then De Paul puts out his arm, handball, penalty, and then he then scores and make it 2-1.
It hasn't been a good move for him overall.
No, let's keep it real. He's probably going to break 30 goals, which is very rare in Syria. So that's the
milestone. Yeah, but goal scoring isn't why he came. Winning was why he came.
And he's won, what, two titles? Two Syria titles?
One so of them, they probably shouldn't have won.
But like they did, but they still won. No,
that's more Inter failing than Juventus playing well.
I think Nuno looks at, for him personally, it's been a success and failure. For me, it's a failure. I view it as an overall failure. For him, it's a success and failure. It's a failure because he wanted to win the Champions League, but it's a success because he's now proven that he's been successful in three different leagues, you know. So he's left his mark in this area, you know. So that's a personal success for him.
Oh, did it break?
No. No, because I spilled it earlier.
Freaking so dream. His first season was the Ajax loss, right?
Mm.
In the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
Then Lyon last year. Yeah. And then Porto this year.
Mm.
That's why I consider it the failure, because he went there to help them win the Champions League. That was why they brought him, because he is Mr. Champions League. He has
they
five.
Both drank their Kool-Aid. They both drank their Kool-Aid. Cristiano and Agnelli and Nedved, they both drank the Kool-Aid of those three CLs. That was down to Cristiano. Cristiano is the reason why they got those three CLs.
Four, not three.
But okay, the three in a row, but four. But really,
4 and 5 years is just as crazy.
Yeah, it's okay. So let's just say, okay, the 4 and 5. So we got to a final in 2015. We got to a final in 2017. We are so close. So maybe all we did is just this final piece, and then boom. But then what they didn't really cater for is you didn't have that team in 2017. You didn't have that team in 2015, because that team in 2017 has pretty much gotten older. And also, you did away with Allegri after that one season. So, you know, because you put Cristiano in that 2017 team, like if you just made a swap and you had Cristiano in that 2017 team, they win that final for sure. For sure. Like without a doubt, they win it because he'd make the difference. You know, they didn't have a critical guy who they could give the ball to.
You still Cristiano, starting like, Buffon? Are they still starting Buffon in goal?
Yeah. Like Buffon didn't make any mistake in the final.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Casemiro. Okay. Okay. This isn't a Juve set. Let's talk about the champions. I'm sure Inter fans are like, bro, we won. Why are y'all still talking about Juventus, man? Because it's a decade at this point. All right, so Teschi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. My name is Tezza. We'll go with Tezza. Does Hapope have an apology for Lukaku, seeing as he regularly called him a brick now that he's led Inter Milan to a league title? So do you have at least some sympathy in your heart or an apology towards our brother Romelu?
No.
It's not weak to say, yeah, you've gotten better.
How is me saying that's gotten better? How's that the same as apologize? I've got nothing to apologize for. When you were bad, you were bad. Now you're good. You're one of the best strikers in the world. So what's there to apologize for? It's like, that makes no logical sense.
In your mind, is there a difference between calling somebody bad and then calling someone Tim's? Like, doesn't that venture into a territory of bullying rather than stating the facts?
No.
Because you gave him a nickname.
Because it was factual that he played like
he was. Were you the one retweeting him with like the, he plays like he has jeans with Tim's on? Was that you? Like retweeting those pictures?
No. But I called him Tim's. I called him Tim's. Same thing as when I said that Benzema, it feels like if he's playing with like two anvils on both feet.
Yeah, but you didn't give him a nickname. You might have called him a brick, but.
But what's the. Benzema was one of the main prime bricks. Limolena.
Actually, wait a minute. You called Benzema a mumu olodo. You disrespected him in Nigerian pidgin or Yoruba, whatever it is. I feel like that's slightly more disrespectful than calling Lukaku Tims. Because like those are like legit insults that you will call somebody probably on the street that's actually done wrong to you.
No, I'm not. Because
and he's just playing football. He's a stranger, and you just
it's how I roll, man. I
would feel more bad about that. Like, damn, I maybe I did go too far on that one.
Daniel Till. I don't apologize. So to reiterate my points, I don't apologize for what I said about Lukaku, because he deserved to be named that because he was that bad. But now that he's improved and he's a lot better, he deserves all the praise in the world. He has been fantastic. Double digits in goals and assists just shows you wow. And also, what's the name of that female football analyst, Mina Rizuki? I remember what she said, that Morata is a... Because I keep on tagging her, man, and I continue to... And actually, I should tag her again. That Morata is much more intelligent than Lukaku. So my thing is that Lukaku, boom, one of the best strikers in the world. Morata still doesn't understand the offside rule. He's been playing football for, I think, about 10 years now, and he still doesn't understand what the offside rule is. So, you know.
She's never going to live that comment down, man.
No, never.
I'd always go for the more intelligent player. Like, hey, what are you saying, really? What do you mean, really?
This black player isn't too smart, you know.
That comment, I don't even think she's conscious of what she's doing. It's just she's eaten the subconscious message of the system that you look at the black player as more physical, strong, whatever. You look at the non-black player as technical, smart, intelligent. And you don't even need to consciously think, oh, like I'm saying it because he's black. It's so deep and permeated into the consciousness of football discussion that people just say it without even knowing what they're saying. Now, it would be up to somebody to be like, so what do you mean by that? Like, so are you saying Lukaku's not smart? You'd have to actually question her on the spot. And then she'd probably be like, oh, no, I didn't mean it like that. But which is why she's never going to live that comment out, because it's just so outrageous. If you gave me, like, Thomas Muller is more intelligent than Lukaku, I think I could ride with that one in a footballing sense. Because what does Muller have other than spatial awareness and technique? I could ride with that. Maybe not even on an intellectual level, like who could hold a conversation better, who'd do better on a test or something like that. Who knows? Lukaku could be a brilliant genius. But in a footballing sense, maybe you could get away with Muller. But Morata is who you say that for? I don't know about all that.
Dude is different, man. Dude is different.
So, Antonio Conte. He's gifted in the league. I'll give him that. Like, in the league, the guy's talented. He's really good at, just the weekly grind of getting results and just fostering a team ethos that I think lasts for 10 months, you know? So for that, he gets credit. I don't like the way he plays football. I don't like his substitution methods. I don't like his attitude. I don't like his head. I mean, like his hair.
His head. You don't like his head.
What's like, you know, his hair. His hair's fake, man. Like, it annoys me. Just accept your baldness. How are you bald in 1997, but now you have a full head of hair? It doesn't make sense.
Who was the player that's criticized his hair?
I don't know. Shout out Willian, though, for putting the trophies over him.
And I remember, though, there was a guy who had a beef with him and about his hair. All right, continue. No, I'm going to look this up.
And the biggest strike against Conte is his European record. Why aren't you good in one-off or two-leg ties, but you're good over the course of a league? Like, what is the disconnect? Because I can understand how you're good in knockout matches, but you're not good in the league. Just because of the stakes at hand or whatever the case may be. Like, there's a cup on the line. Everybody, like, you know, it's the Drogba thing. But, like, in the league, 7 out of 10, 8 on a good day. You give him a knockout round, 8, 9, 10. I can understand that. But the flip, I don't understand. Like, you're really good in the league, not good in cups. Like, do you know why Antonio Conte struggles?
So before I answer that, I'll give an answer to that. It was so Europa League last year when Sevilla played against Inter. Eva Banega was the guy who then did like a reference to the thingy, and I think Conte took that personally, man. So yeah,
Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Okay, so the answer to that is the dynamics of a knockout game are different to the dynamics of a league. A league is about consistency. So in a league, you don't need to really, you just need to have your formation, your tactic, and then just grind that through on a consistent basis. A knockout competition involves a lot more tactics. So you need to involve a lot more tactics, and there's much more in-game management. What is Conte's biggest weakness? Substitutions.
In-game
one of
management.
The key things in a knockout game is in-game management and substitutions. You know, because how people approach a knockout game where it's a smaller margin of error is different. Match day 7, match day 9, match day 10. Look, you have several other games to still make it up and so forth. So it's a war of attrition. It's a marathon. Yeah. When you look at marathon runners, like the Kenyans aren't first to begin with. It's probably some white dude who's like leading to begin with at first. And then the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, they then slowly take their time. But they just make sure that they're just close enough to the pack, and then boom, then they then make
shout out to my Callan Gene out there. Shout out to the Callan Gene. You know.
Yeah. So they make the move like towards like in this third or second to last lap.
The kips.
But my thing is sprints. When you're doing it, it's a sprint, you've got to fully go for it. 100%. Like boom, make it happen. 200 meters, you have to go for it. So for a knockout game, there is no time. It's all about now. And I think that...
So Conte is East African, not West African.
Yes, he's East African. he's East African. He's a marathon runner, not a...
He's a marathon runner. Yeah, got you. Because you don't see Nigerians in the long distance. You don't see Kenyans in the sprints.
Yeah,
it's don't. Different physiology, I guess. All right.
I mean, you have to make it out of the Champions groups, man. Come on. Like, you have to at least make it out of the Champions groups.
All right. This is last thing on Inter. Because they are champions, so I do want to give them their due.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people say that next year they could do something in the Champions League.
No. I hopefully expect them to make it through the groups, but I don't see them getting past the quarters.
Please be in the top two.
Yeah.
That's your mission. Just
baby steps, baby steps.
No Europa League next year. That's your mission. I want to see you. No. Champions League. And lastly, if he is a marathon runner, and he probably should have won last year, but, you know, Juventus were holding on. Is the 2021-2022 season, is it Inter's again? If we go back, we have 9 in a row for Juventus. Then I think 1 for AC Milan. That's the Ibrahimovic, Thiago Silva. Mm. But before that, it was 5 in a row. Was it Mancini and Mourinho?
Yeah, Mancini and Mourinho, yeah.
Could we be seeing sea change? Now it's Inter's time to win, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 until the others figure it out? Or do you think we might get a more competitive Serie A where anybody could win it, any of 3, 4 teams?
That's a really good question, man, because my thing is I don't know what's going to happen to Juventus this summer with Cristiano and so forth. Napoli look all right. Napoli look all right. But I do see, I think Atalanta are overachieving. They are overachieving. Mm. Napoli still need more players. Like Osimhen was a very good signing, but they need more players and they need more recruitment. I don't know whether De Laurentiis has the funds to...
Why'd you say his name like that?
Wait, isn't this not his name?
No, it's like you said it kind of like you know how Stephen A. Smith says Kwame Brown when you said De Laurentiis.
I didn't even know what to say.
La Liga. I don't even know how to frame it. It's just wild. You know, like I think Madrid played Barcelona.
Sevilla lost. So they're out of it. Yeah. I'm just looking at the other score now. Athletic Bilbao, 90th minute, Iñaki Williams goal. So now it's
1-0? 1-0, 2-1. What was the score?
1-0, 1-0. 1-0.
Damn.
So now it's a three horse race, because now, so Atletico 76, Madrid and Barcelona 74, Sevilla 70. I mean, they're not totally out of it, but 6 points adrift with what, 5, 6, 7, 8, 4 games to go.
They would have had to win that. Yeah. But so Atletico play Barcelona. If Madrid are going to win, that game needs to be a draw. Madrid win their game, and I think they have the tiebreaker on Atletico, so they'd go top.
Mm.
So Barcelona could be doing the Lord's work if you're a Madrid fan, and they just need to not. They need to make sure Atletico don't win, but Barca need to win in order to go a point above, which would take them to 77 points if there's not games in between. This might be 2 weeks from now, rather than next week. But yeah, the thing about Atletico that I just discovered yesterday, or that I thought about yesterday, is people have all these scenarios of, okay, if Atletico beat this team, if Atletico beat that team, they have games in hand, this, that. You can't put points in their pocket. It's impossible to say, okay, I know Atletico are going to beat Team X. You can't do that. It's even hard to do that with Madrid and with Barcelona. But you can't put points in Atletico's pocket at this point. This would be, I think someone told me that this would be the all-time collapse in the top five leagues to be ahead by 12 points with, I think they had two games in hand.
Mm.
And to lose that, or for that to be eroded and you lose the league, I think that hasn't happened ever.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
And the last time that somebody had this big of a slip was Atletico again, and they had like an 8-point lead or something like that, and they let it slip. So I can't give points to Simeone. I can't say, if I look up their schedule quickly.
It's Barca, Sociedad, Osasuna, and Valladolid.
Exactly. So the Osasuna and Valladolid games, you think that's 6 points. you can't say that for these guys.
No, you can't. They'll only beat Elche, our friends Elche, 1-0, and Elche missed a penalty in the final minutes where Oblak stepped off his line, so it should have been retaken.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Ooh, okay. How do you feel about that? If I miss the penalty and my foot is, and your foot is off the line, do I deserve to take another one? Like, especially if you don't touch the ball.
No, you don't. No, but
you missed.
No, this was, so basically, look, if, what is the rule state? That's what I want to know. My thing is, from me viewing it, if the keeper did to make a save, how did me going over my line early somehow distract you from not putting the ball in the frame and putting with the goal if I did not touch the ball at all? But if the rule states, if the keeper steps off his line before the player strikes the ball, it must be retaken, then boom. And I believe that that's what, I don't think the rule will state that, well, only if the keeper makes contact with the ball, if he steps, I think the rule just states that the keeper must stay on his line until the ball is struck by the penalty kick taker. So, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
How did the Oblak coming off his line make you miss the frame of the goal?
I think the letter of the law probably equals you retake it. Because it is what it says.
But the spirit of the law.
The spirit of the law, I don't think you should be retaking those. Because the advantage a goalkeeper has from stepping off the line early is to save it. It's not like that's the only reason that law's there, is because he can more quickly close down the angle to a corner. If you miss the corner altogether, then what advantage did I get? None. So spirit of the law, just play the game. But I would suspect if that happened to Barcelona, or if it happened to Real Madrid, maybe not so Real Madrid because of the whole Super League thing, but you know, generally speaking, if one of those clubs, they probably get it retaken just because of the political nature of La Liga. I don't trust that institution at all. So Yeah, they got away with one. But who knows? Maybe they retake it and Old Black saves it. It's not like it's outside the realms of possibility that Old Black can't save a penalty. So there's no guarantee, even though it's highly likely. So, yeah, looking at the table, who do you think wins? Who you got?
I'm sticking with Barcelona.
Even after they lost. Was it Granada that they lost to?
Yeah, Granada. But
even last week, wasn't it last week? We were like, oh, they got Granada. That's probably 3 points. Not so fast, my friend.
No. Didn't make any sense because that just put a spanner in the works. But I still see Real Madrid like drawing a game here, drawing another game here. And I see just Messi being the difference because I think they beat Atletico.
Me too.
In the coming game.
But I think that just helps Madrid.
True. It could help them, but we still need to see what happens. So what Madrid have?
Madrid have Sevilla, I think.
So Sevilla, Granada.
Yeah.
But then have Bilbao away. And, you know, Bilbao, difficult. Yeah, they beat Atletico and Sevilla recently. So those guys could be the spoilers. And then Villarreal at home.
All right, so I'm still going Madrid. It will be Madrid until it's not for me. Like, until it's mathematically impossible, I give it to Zidane. Ligue 1, PSG won. They beat Lens. What else happened? Leo played... who did they play? They played Nice. Mm-hmm. And they beat Nice. Yilmaz scored another goal. The goal from the second Turkish player, whose name is slipping my mind right now, crazy goal, incredible goal. So they got two goals from two Turkish players. So, you know, I don't know. Leo have a Turkish connection.
Oh, Mehmet Zeki Çelik.
Çelik, yeah. Çelik. Yeah, his goal was a really good goal.
No, look. It would be a great story.
Lyon won. They beat Monaco, so they're kind of still in it. But then it more kills Monaco than it helps Lyon. So it's between PSG and Leo. Will Leo drop points? And PSG can't mess up at all. Basically, there's three games left in the season. They got to get 9 points, and hopefully Leo draw from their perspective, or loss here. So
Leo have Lyon, Saint-Étienne, who lost 8-2 to Bayern, and Angers. Yes, I mean, Lyon is the hardest game of those three. But
you know what? Okay, I need to look up how you pronounce Lens, because in my mind, you do pronounce the S on this one.
You see, I think you might be right. Just that's from my French, I think, because I remember when on ESPN FC, when Frank Leboeuf said Rennes, he said Rennes. So I'm like, if Leboeuf is saying Rennes, then yeah, maybe you do pronounce the S. So.
Lens. But it's like the nasal Lens, like Lens. Not lens. 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 Just a little French lesson for us. I don't think that's going to make it. But yeah, Ren. I always thought it was Stade Ren. But if he says Rennes.
Rennes, yeah.
And if it's Leboeuf, then.
It's Rennes.
Yeah, because for me, I know not to pronounce the S. So Angier. I'm never going to say Angiers.
Angers.
Anchor. But yeah. All right. Do you think this is more related, like all the title races except for England, I suppose? What do you think this is down to? Because PSG shouldn't be in that territory, really.
Maybe COVID has something to do with it.
You think?
But my thing is not, if you take La Liga, for example, Real Madrid have had a lot of injuries, huge injuries, where they've hardly been able to even pick in enough subs. Barcelona had all that mess during preseason.
Yeah.
So they had the worst preparation. So I think Barcelona and Real Madrid, you can pick out specific issues that they both had where they were not really normally at their best. So in France, Tuchel being sacked, Pochettino coming in, totally, totally different philosophy from Tuchel. Takes time to get used to that because I think they've lost 4 games under Pochettino, and they've lost 8 games in total. So, you know, maybe so that's manager change.
Has there been any real improvement if they've both lost four games? Like, was sacking Tuchel a premature decision?
Maybe
the situation was just kind of untenable.
He said something like in an interview about how if you're a manager of PSG, you're not really the manager, you're not really in control. So I think that sort of rubbed people the wrong way.
Because
so.
I can tell by his Chelsea interviews, I don't watch the pre-match interviews as much as I used to, like with Conte and Mourinho, but you can just tell, like, the guy, he'll say what's on his mind, even if it's maybe, like, not good. So he'll be honest, you know. So maybe the owners of PSG weren't really fond of that. So it's just, yeah, he has to go. Even if Poch isn't an improvement, he's better than dealing with this guy. So who knows? Generally, we would have started Manchester United Liverpool. That's the match that probably most fans that listen to this podcast would have some attachment to. Mm. I had to guess. But, you know, the fans were on the pitch, so it didn't happen. You know, I was asleep. I woke up. I saw the game had been postponed, and I just went back to sleep. I was like, well, I woke up for that game, and I was like, well, if it's postponed, I didn't see the pictures of people on the pitch and stuff, but I was like, all right, if it's postponed, maybe it's COVID or fan protest something. Maybe it was against the Super League or whatever it was. So then when I woke up, I did, you know, my reading, and I went on Twitter, looked at Carl's page or whatever, and like, oh, they're protesting the Glazers. They want the Glazers out. They broke into the stadium, basically, and on the pitch, lighting flares and just looking kind of hooliganist, if that's a word.
Hooliganistic.
Hooliganistic? Are we sure? I don't know if those are words, but, you know.
Who cares?
Y'all know what we mean. I think hooliganistic sounds better. So
It's a word now.
Yeah, that's what they were looking like. So I was like, okay. I don't know how effective the protest will be. It's not a good look for Manchester United. So maybe they do have to check whatever they're doing on an internal level. But
I find it hard to empathize with people protesting this way for a football club. Because I was having a discussion with someone in a WhatsApp group, and I talked about how, you know, in protests you need to disrupt and so forth. And I said, wait, hang on. Are they protesting racism, homophobia, women's rights, equal pay, higher pay, the environment? These are the really issues where, okay, you have to disrupt and so forth. This is because your football club was in the ESL, your football club doesn't buy enough players, and the owners, I repeat, the owners are treating the club like their own property, which it is. So my thing is, how are you going to tell me what I should do with what I own? For instance, let's say you have a house, and this house was painted red. For hundreds of years, it was painted red. And I just happened to buy it. Yeah. Better thing. I was thinking a club, a nightclub. And for several years, this nightclub played rap. And people have known this nightclub. And this nightclub is very important to this community. And it has historical consistency in this community because of the rap music it plays, and it has this blue collar. I come in and I buy it, which means I own it. I want to play R&B now because it seems as if people are now shifting to R&B as opposed to rap now. And you know what? I want to paint the whole thing red. Now, people can say you're not respecting the history of this nightclub, you're not respecting the community and so forth. You can say that, but I own it. And because I own it, I can do whatever the heck I want with it. So I shouldn't be at the behest of what's historical value or what so forth it is. All I care about is that I own it, and I now need to make this profitable. Once it stops being profitable, I now need to sell it and find a guy who has the right price to buy it off of me.
What if your mom painted your bedroom pink and you're like 7, 8, 9 years old? You don't have the affinity with pink and purple that you do now, I'll assume.
Okay.
And your mom comes in, paints your room a color you don't like.
Okay.
And she's like, it's my house. If you don't like it, you can move out. It's her house. It's her wall. It's her paint. She can do whatever she wants with the walls.
But it's
your room, though. And you didn't have any say in the paint color that was chosen.
See, that's an analogy that doesn't work. Do you know why it doesn't work?
Do you not think that you have the right to just at least protest a bit? Like, hey, mom, like, what you're doing with this thing that, work. Yeah, that yes, you own, but it still affects my life. I feel like I should have some say in what you're doing.
The reason why that doesn't work is the mother owns the house, but every room is owned by the occupants of that room.
No. Well, maybe that's how lived, but... When I was a child, this is my house, this is my wall, this is my house. If you don't like it, go.
Okay, that's fine. But what I would expect in most instances is you, like, the living room, sitting room, dining room, kitchen, bro, the mom... She has that whole thing. But that door that leads into your bedroom, that is your own.
I couldn't close my door when I was a kid. I couldn't close my door. There were no closed doors allowed when I was a kid. Because we got to see what are you doing? So what are you doing? So I couldn't close my door. So maybe it's a bad example for you and it works for me. Like if my mom just decided, hey, the room's purple now because my favorite color is purple. I don't want it to be purple. I would give my little temper tantrum, my little protest. It's not going to stop the paint happening because she owns it.
Okay. Let's my use dad that analogy. Owns it.
But my protest, I feel like, is a valid one because I think you did frame it well when you said, you know, it's not for racism, it's not for women's rights, human rights.
Okay. Let me try and break it down. Break it down because I think me and Nick sort of had an argument about this because Nick attacked me by saying that I don't understand English for football and I don't understand the heart and soul about football. That I just view this as entertainment and I'm like a soulless piece of crap. So here, let me try and just frame. Okay, he did say piece of crap, but he could. But let me just try and frame. My thing here is that I can understand. People's attachments to a football club, because I think we've even discussed this before previously, where people don't actually care whether their club wins or loses. It's just part of their life. Like a guy sends me this Instagram video of this Chelsea fan who said that one of the greatest days of his life was the fan protest stopping Chelsea getting into the ESL, and says that he was more happier than that success than Chelsea winning the Champions League, which he was there for. I was like, okay, wow, okay, this is deep. Like, this is different. That you felt more happiness with your clubs not joining the ESL than winning the Champions League. That's different. And my thing about it is that it's living in England and seeing these people and so forth, like English people, they'd rather die than give up their loyalty. So for them, this football club and everything is a way of life and so forth. So I can respect that. I respect that. But I don't empathize. I will never empathize. There is no way in hell I'm ever going to view you, a protest about a football club to the same value as a protest about racism, homophobia, women's rights, environment, and so forth. Which for me, those are real issues. So it's the
difference between sympathy and empathy.
What do you mean?
Sympathy is I feel sad, but I can't necessarily relate to the sadness, or like I feel bad that you feel bad. Empathy is more like I relate to that sadness because it affects me or I've felt the same. So you can't relate to the Manchester United fan's sadness on some personal, deeper level.
Yeah. So I
because can't I don't have a connection to a football club like that. But I can still feel bad that you feel bad. That's probably where I am with it. And I can put it this way. I've seen my fair share of Manchester United fans. Have you ever seen the green and yellow scarves anywhere except Manchester and maybe some people in London or around England? Do you know what I mean? Those like the green and yellow are signifiers of like, we want the Glazers out. We don't want these people in Manchester with our club. Woo, woo, woo. Not to say they don't exist. I'm sure they're out there, but they might sympathize. But can you empathize with somebody who was born in Manchester or greater Manchester, who, you know, it was passed down from the grandfather who was going to Old Trafford from 18, whatever. You can't relate to that. And if those are the people who are in the stadium that got the game postponed, I understand why you're there and I understand your behavior while you're there. as long as you're vocalizing why you're there, you don't like these American guys who wanted to put you in the Super League, or they don't understand the club, that this, that, fine. But we got to understand, at one point, Manchester United were owned by the fans. How did these American owners get in there? Somebody gave up a stake in the club for cash. That's what happens with all these clubs. All these clubs were set up by workers' unions and just of the people, community project. In most cases, I'd say 95% of cases, football clubs were owned by the fans. And in many cases, they still are. Like, if you look at Real Madrid, Barcelona, they have to elect presidents. It's always going to be for the fans, you know? But once you allow somebody to, just if I can land, once you allow somebody to come in and buy 80, 90% of the club, you got to look at the person who sold Kroenke Arsenal. Who allowed the Glazers to get in? You look at Chelsea. You don't like Abramovich because he does this and that. Somebody made money off it. And we got to understand that most football clubs aren't profitable. So let the billionaire come and do what he does. It's the difference of, would you rather Chelsea be kind of sort of challenging for top four, or would you rather have the Champions League? For the vast majority of Chelsea fans around the world now, give me that CL. Give me that Premier League. But for the local person, that West London dude, I genuinely think they don't care. They just love Chelsea, whatever that means to them. And they could be third division.
In 1992, your club stopped being a football club and it became a brand. The moment that the Premier League was formed, the game changed. And now it was primarily about making money. That's what I've always said, that club football and internationals, these are two different entities. Internationals, that is the heart and soul. That is the reality. Pele said it's best. Pele said, in club football, you are kissing the badge of one team one season, and the next season you are kissing the badge of another team. Like, how people can try and relate heart, soul, purity to the thing in club football, you're mad. These guys are earning, what, 200,000, 300,000 a week? These guys will say they love your club one season. The next season, they don't say that they love another club. So therefore, it's like, whoever is paying me, I'm going to say I love you. So this is the most soulless thing that exists, which is why it says that club football is here for our entertainment, footballing-wise. Maybe say, oh no, the culture of Man United, the culture. I mean, what culture? What? It's an institution where you get paid a lot of money for. That's what it is. The reality, the realness is your country, because your country is culture, it's history, it's an identity. Brazilians have a way of playing football. Italians have a way of playing football. Nigerians have a way of playing football. And that never changes. And that is a culture that is steeped into the history of the country and the culture of the country and of the nation. Like, or the Man United. What is the Man United away? The team of today is so different from the team from 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Fergie has left. The way that Mourinho ran things is totally different from how Fergie ran things. You know? So, the thing about it is, you have to accept this. Specifically Manchester United, you're a global brand. You're a global brand. And the reason why people talk about it is because you're a brand. Footballing-wise, you're not one of the best teams in Europe. You can't compete with the very best. And you're very far away from being amongst the very best. But in terms of a brand and popularity, that's what you're about. So you are a brand. And those guys in Manchester, you've got to accept that. What makes your club a viable entity is that fan in Japan, that fan in America, that fan in Nigeria, in South Africa, in Australia, in Canada, because of your global fan base. So those guys out there, you have no ownership of the club. No, your club is owned by these two Americans. And who created this? It was the guys who created the rules that allow these guys to have majority ownership. So those are the guys you should be angry with that created a scenario where you don't have a situation where you have presidents. So we say, oh, fans. No. Why are you angry at the Glazers? Be angry at people who set up rules that state that someone can do this. In Spain, no. You have a president who is elected, and the president has to now make an appeal to the fans. Mm. And the president has to represent the fans. That's what Spain said. Germany said, you can only have 49%. The 51% will always belong to the fans. But England said, Let's make some money. Let's make some cash. Hey, sugar daddies, come on down, baby. Wild, wild west. Let's ride, baby. So, come on. But also, but nobody is ever looking at that angle, though. So,
a football club will always need money. Like, so if you go back to the beginning of Manchester United, I'm pretty sure 1880s, 1890s, somewhere in there. The club was founded. I know it was founded under a different name. The name escapes me, and I can't be bothered to look it up. Is it
Salford FC?
I don't think so. The club was going broke, and they appealed to some businessman in Manchester, and he basically bought the club, changed the name to Manchester United, and so goes history. Like, even from the very beginning, a businessman was interested in sponsoring the club because you can obviously see the appeal that the game has to the masses. Just that in that context, it was local. People in Manchester care about this thing. The more technology progressed and the world book shrinks, in no small part to radio, television, increasingly so the internet, you could reach not just the people in Manchester, Greater Manchester, England, Europe, but you can reach the whole world, which means you're going to attract business interests from Africa, Asia, Australia, and the Americas. So that an American decided it's now my turn to be like the guy from the beginning. It's just we're dealing with billions instead of maybe thousands or hundreds of thousands. But it's the same principle. You think someone who's from Manchester is less loves money less than somebody from America? It might make you feel better at night. You might sleep a little bit better.
I mean,
but trust me, this idea that like if we got somebody who's local, he's not going to be as greedy.
A businessman is a businessman, man.
Bro, like
his primary concern is his business, not the well-being of the club. So think
about it. The protests are effective in this reality that we're creating. Manchester United fans, they create such a fuss that the Glazers are forced to sell to somebody in Manchester. Now the club is owned by a Manchester billionaire or a group, a consortium of Manchester fans who can come up with £5-6 billion.
I beg.
Do you guys think that if you pay £4-6 billion for a football club, you're going to try to take a loss for the interest of the fans? Or do you think there's still going to be greed in place?
You paid $4 billion.
In 1992, when they created the Premier League, once they said this thing is about global branding and money, what they did is they accelerated the value of all of these clubs. Manchester United wasn't worth $4-6 billion before the advent of the Premier League. Liverpool weren't where they are now. The Premier League helped spike the value of these clubs because of the branding that was attached to it as opposed to the English First Division. Once you raise the value of something so much, the only people who can buy it, once we reach billions, you're looking at the owner of Spotify who's trying to buy Arsenal. You think that's a better move than Kroenke? Like, just because he has some tangential connection. I grew up being an Arsenal fan. So he's gonna want a loss? Spotify owner? The one who gives people 0.00000001 for a play on a song? You think this guy's really in the business of, yo, man, we're going to go give back to the club and this and that? Like, once you deal with people who are in billions, you open the door to people who make billions. And I've always said this. I don't think you can have billions of dollars and be inherently good. Because who are you stepping on to get that money? You must be crushing somebody to have billions.
Maybe you found it on a rock.
If so.
Good.
To get billions, somebody must be being exploited for that money to be in your pocket. So if the only people who can buy Manchester United for $5 billion, what is the short list?
So who did Steve Jobs exploit for to make all the money for Apple? or who did Twitter dude exploit to make all those billions through
But Steve Jobs, I mean, where does the aluminum come from? Where does the gold in all the phones and laptops and stuff come from? Where does the glass come from? Glass is made from sand. Where does all that come from? Where are those resources coming from? Who are you paying? What are you paying? Have you seen the coltan mining in Congo? You tell me that's not exploitation?
But his idea for the iPhone and so forth, that idea is priceless. Because that idea changed a whole industry. You know? And I think everything else is extra, but that idea of I'm going to make your phone pretty much be the hub of a whole bunch of stuff. That was a good idea.
It's a good idea, but to keep it.
What do you mean by it's a good idea? It's the idea that has defined a generation.
But go with me. If it's such a good idea, how come everybody can have one?
What about everyone can have one?
The iPhone is the most sold phone on the planet.
Okay.
How is that possible? If it's such a great idea, you would think if it's such a great idea, it would have to be so expensive that only a certain amount of people could afford to purchase it. But they can mass produce them on a level that is generally affordable for the average consumer. How is that possible?
Forget the materials. Forget the materials. The idea.
The materials cost money. To make the idea costs money.
Cool. You always need to get the price. At the end of the day, the idea is what's made him a billionaire. Now everything else,
you can have
the idea.
You can have as many ideas as you want. What matters is, are you able to make them materially relevant or possible? So how do you make enough iPhones to make sure that everybody has a level of attachment to this idea?
Yeah, you get all these people to make them and so forth.
So how do you do that? If you actually had to pay the going rate for coltan, if you actually had to pay the going rate for aluminum, if you actually had to pay the going rate for gold, if you actually had to pay the going rate for,
as I say,
glass...
Anoku, yes, you screwed them over. But at the end of the day, the idea, individually,
that the phones wouldn't cost $1,000. They might cost $8,000 if you actually produce them without sweatshop work in Asia.
Still doesn't negate the fact that the idea is what's made in the billion.
The idea isn't what makes you the billion. It's the way to implement it. This is more an extra, isn't it?
We're going off the rails here. Let's get back. Because this is
we will debate this on a Talking Tactics extra. What my point is, you can't make $1 billion without exploiting somebody.
Not always. That's my fun.
You can't give me one example.
Steve Jobs.
I'm really tempted just to quit this right now. Just like press X.
Look. Let's move. Because we'll be arguing all day. Let's move.
Like to say Apple have made their money without exploiting anybody is utter nonsense.
His idea made in the billion.
No. Ideas don't make money. Ideas don't make money.
He came up with that idea, changed the whole game, man. Steve Jobs, thanks you, bro.
I'm going to save my ether for the Patreon. All right, here we go. Gareth Bale scored a hat trick.
Well done.
Yeah, man. Do you think this is like the last time we'll see Beast Mode? I feel like, oh, man, this is like the swan song. I feel bad in a way. Like, this is as good as it's going to get, man. This last big moment. I just wanted to recognize it because it could be the last. Champions League.
I think City beats PSG 2-1 again. Damn. And I have no idea what happens to the Chelsea-Madrid game. It could be 1-1 and we go to penalties.
I think PSG win 2-1 and it goes to extra time.
Oh.
And in extra time, PSG win on aggregate 4-3.
Oh, wow.
Chelsea-Madrid... Varane's out. I'm not sure the fitness levels of Valverde, Mendy, Ramos. I don't know. Well,
Mendy and Ramos have been training, though. They've been training.
I'm going to go 1-0 Madrid. Obviously, that's not a safe bet. But, yeah. I think 2-1. One of these is going to extra time. I can't decide if it's PSG or if it's the other one, but...
Chelsea Real Madrid is going extra time, I believe. I can see that being 1-1 and then extra time.
So both of these results get flipped, in my opinion. I've been wrong before. I can be wrong again.
So you're saying it's a Real Madrid PSG final?
That's the final I want to see. So that's the one I'm trying to rationalize.
I don't care what you want to see. What do you think is going to actually be the final? For me, I believe it's going to be...
Madrid City would be like my logical conclusion, but I'm not being logical.
Yeah. I mean, City are in the final. Chelsea, Madrid, I can't call it. I really can't call it. Specifically after that first leg, I can't call it.
I want Hazard against Neymar in the final, man. I was promised that in 2012, 2013, 2014, when these guys were breaking out as stars. Hazard
is finished, bro.
That's fine. But I still want my Hazard-Neymar Champions League final. Like, I was never given the Messi-Ronaldo one that you guys said was going to happen. They just never met. But the next two guys on that list were supposed to be Hazard and Neymar. Maybe Chelsea-Barcelona final could have happened once upon a time, but this is the only chance we're probably going to get it. I guess we saw it partially in the World Cup.
Brazil decided to get injured. Yes, very good game. It was a very good game.
I need to watch it again. I don't have a great memory of it. The World Cup, something with World Cups, man, except for like the finals and some games in the groups, like the very first games, I can recall those. But something happens like after a month of football where it just kind of all runs together. Due to this social media blackout and how lenient the FA seemed to be about racist incidents, what do you think is the appropriate punishment for racist chants from fans and players found guilty of using racial slurs?
Well, online, you get banned from the online thing, and maybe you get a lifetime ban from entering into the game. If it's at a stadium, which is what they would do, like, lifetime ban. If you're proven to have been racist and so forth, they get a lifetime ban.
A guy in Australia was banned 10 years, I guess, from Stamford Bridge or Chelsea event for anti-Semitic tweets. Oh, they named him. His name is Sam Mole from Kettering.
Hello, Sam.
If a 10-year ban for online, if you do it inside the stadium, that's not that it's any better or worse, but nah, you can't come back. That should be standard, you know?
Yeah.
Like from all football fans across, from all football stadiums across the country, Wembley all the way down to the marshes. Like, you shouldn't be at football. I don't feel like that's like some difficult thing to do.
Simple stadium ban, man. But you know, it's if people take it as seriously, which they don't. So,
and that's for social media. You'd have to find out who are these people, because what if they're doing it under, you know, Jorginho Easter 557, and they just call, you know, Tammy Abraham this, or Paul Pogba that, or Raheem Sterling this, or Half Hope that, you know, just based off YouTube commentary. How do you find these people if Twitter doesn't have like a mechanism by which to find you? I guess this guy actually used his whole name, Sam. Samuel. So, you know, at least he said it with his chest. But how do you find the people? I don't know. If you get something for free, you're the product, is something that I was told in like a business class in college. So if Twitter is available to you for free, if Facebook is available to you for free, if Instagram is available to you for free, if email is available to you but for free, somebody's making money off you. You just get a free hit. You get to enjoy it for free. You can make your account for free. But somebody is selling the information that you give them, which is why Twitter asks for your birthday, why Instagram asks for this. Because they just want as much information as they can get on you, sell it to a company, or just use it for their own purposes. If you're Facebook and you own Instagram, it's perhaps in your best interest to make the barrier for entry as low as possible. Don't make people give their passport information. Don't make people give their driver's information. Don't make people give their real names. Because if we do, our usership goes down and we can't collect as much metadata on individuals as we would like to. And the people who are already in it, if we had to make them give real information, how many of those just stop using our service? And if that's 30%, you really think these companies are willing to lose 30% of their profit margin? The social media companies themselves would actually have to value humanity over money. Like, what is right to do to a human versus profit margin? And in the world we live in, I suppose that's not really a difficult question to answer, how they would perceive it.
C'est la vie, is the world that we're living in, man.
It's sick, though.
You just have to be realistic, bruv.
If you guys have solutions, get in contact with us. We'd love to hear your solutions. Anything left, Have Hope?
Daniel Tulloch, I believe we have given them an awesome, amazing show for them to chew on. All I can say, guys, is be very aware, take the red pill, and try and view the world in as much green code as possible. That frees your mind. Blue pill keeps you in a wonderland. Okay. But then, as Cypher did say, ignorance is bliss. So,
which one's Cypher?
He's the guy.
Is that the captain from Bad Boys?
Yes, Joe Pantoliano.
That guy. Anyway, this has been Talking Tactics. We thank you guys for listening. Remember to follow us on Twitter, Instagram. Mm. Keep in mind, on Twitter and Instagram, you are being tapped by Facebook, Twitter, Google, all these places, but you know, it is what it is. We're in the world we live in. SoundCloud, follow us over there. If you're on Spotify, give us a follow. Apple Podcasts, subscribe, it's free. Leave us a 5-star review and we'll read it on the show. If you want to help us out monetarily, we have a Patreon page. I'm at Dandy to look half hope. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at halfhopefootballhot.com.
Indeed, this has been Talking Tactics. Thank you guys for listening once again. We will see you guys next Tuesday. Talking Tactics podcast, sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always football.
Indeed. Peace, peace, peace.
Peace, peace, peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.